And if you'd like to open your Bibles with me to Isaiah 41, if you'd like a Bible in your hand, there are spare Bibles on the racks at the back of the church downstairs. You're very welcome to go and grab one and use it throughout the service. Some months ago, I was preaching on doubt, and I was asked, I asked if anyone had any doubts that they wanted a sermon on. Didn't get many answers, which is probably good. This one is this: I would like to hear a sermon on fear that God won't provide. So I thought we'd tackle that one. And the verse that came to my mind was Isaiah 41. It's part of the messianic promises of the Bible. It's part of God's preparing the world to receive Jesus, his son. So we'll turn to Isaiah 41, and this is what it says. This is God talking. "Be silent before me, you islands. Let the nations renew their strength. Let them come forward and speak. Let us meet together at the place of judgment. Who has stirred up one from the east, calling him in righteousness to his service? He hands nations over to him and subdues kings before him. He turns them to dust with his sword, to wind-blown chaff with his bow. He pursues them and moves on unscathed by a path his feet have not travelled before. Who has done this and carried it through, calling forth the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, with the first of them and with the last. I am he. The islands have seen it and fear. The ends of the earth tremble. They approach and come forward. Each helps the other, says to his brother, 'Be strong.' The craftsman encourages the goldsmith, and he who smooths with a hammer spurs on him who strikes the anvil. He sees that the welding, it is good. He nails down the idol so that it will not topple." You're supposed to laugh at that point. Okay? They've put all that effort into making a little god, but they have to nail it down in case it falls over in the wind. God can be quite sarcastic at times. "But you, O Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, your descendants of Abraham, my father, I took you from the ends of the earth. From its farthest corners I called you. I said, 'You are my servant. I have chosen you and have not rejected you.' So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. All who rage against you will surely be shamed and disgraced. Those who oppose you will be as nothing and perish. Though you search for your enemies, you will not find them. Those who wage war against you will be as nothing at all. For I am the Lord your God, who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, 'Do not fear, I will help you.' Do not be afraid, O worm Jacob, O little Israel, for I myself will help you, declares the Lord, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel." I wish God would stop calling me a worm. I'm not saying it's wrong, just... "See, I will make you into a threshing sledge, new and sharp with many teeth. You will thresh the mountains and crush them and reduce the hills to chaff. You will winnow them. The wind will pick them up and the gale will blow them away. But you will rejoice in the Lord and glory in the Holy One of Israel. The poor and needy search for water, but there is none. Their tongues are parched with thirst, but the Lord will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will make rivers flow on barren heights and springs within the valleys. I will turn the desert into pools of water and the parched ground into springs. I will put in the desert the cedar and the acacia, the myrtle and the olive. I will set pines in the wasteland, the fir and the cypress together, so that people may see and know, may consider and understand that the hand of the Lord has done this, that the Holy One of Israel has created it." That's God. Bill Johnson is pastor of a church in Reading, but not Reading in Berkshire. This is Reading in the west coast of America. church that's gone through a remarkable revival and seen wonderful miracles of healing in their fellowship. And this is his conclusion. He says, "One of the most encouraging things I've experienced as a pastor is seeing believers' respond differently to crises than they used to. It is seldom our reaction of fear or panic. Instead, many have learned to make a bold confession of God's nature, feed their hearts on his promises, and boast in his absolute goodness." I would so love you to leave this morning doing just that. Now, that's quite a challenge I've set myself, to leave here boasting in God's absolute goodness and feeding your hearts on his promise. If I can do that, well, I'd probably be poached by a big church somewhere as the greatest preacher ever, but I'll do my best. The fear that God won't provide then is what we're dealing with. Actually, do you know the most common command in the Bible is "do not be afraid"? That is the most common command in the Bible. So God knows us perfectly well. It's no surprise to God then that we fear. Fear is common. And the Bible is full of people. The Psalms are full of people having panic attacks. If you read through the Psalms, you can spot the panic attack and feel better about the ones that you've thrown, the wobblies that you've thrown down the years. Fear tells us that we're not important. Fear tells us that we have no future. Fear tells us there's no one to help us. And those three facts are not facts at all, they're lies. This chapter actually begins by raising fear, but raising fear not in God's people, raising fear in unbelievers. And verse 5, God talks about how the islands fear. Now, the islands is shorthand for unbelievers. It means people out there, people who don't know God. Very often it means that in the Bible. So the people who don't know God have seen God and fear. The ends of the earth, they tremble. They approach and come forward. They're frightened. Fear is a characteristic of unbelief. It's right to fear God's judgment. If you won't believe, then it's right to be afraid of God. And the unbelievers invent unlikely alliances, verse 6. They come together, each helps each other and says to his brother, "Be strong." They encourage each other in their unbelief. They write books on atheism. In America, they have atheist camps, which seems strange, really, to go on a camp for something you don't believe in. It just seems kind of weird, doesn't it? Doesn't it seem weird? But they do that. They help each other. They crowd together to kind of calm their fears. They invent false beliefs, verse 7. And we've seen how the goldsmith and the craftsman, they build their idols and have to nail them in place in case they get stolen or fall over. And the subplot to that, the between lines, is that's no kind of God at all. And so they invent false beliefs. And we go on inventing false beliefs. We've invented false beliefs in even our own day. The belief that all religions are the same. No, they're not. They all disagree. They can't be the same. And we can nail down logic so it won't slip through our fingers in modern society. But God is still there. God is still there. So let's turn then to verses 1 to 4. As God tells the world to be silent before him. And he's going to bring someone from the east. Now that's actually an historical reference. A very unlikely historical reference, but it happens. Isaiah is looking forward to a period when Israel was carried away in exile to modern-day Iraq. The city was called Babylon. So Israel is kind of in exile in Iraq. What happened was that God called someone from put the land of the Medes and Persians, a man called Cyrus, who was kind of came roughly the area what we call Iran. So just picture this: God calls an unbeliever, a pagan, from Iran to Iraq to free the Jews so they can go back to Jerusalem. Now, how likely is that? But it happens. That's exactly what happened. Cyrus invaded from Iran, came to Iraq, made a decree that the Jews could return to Jerusalem and help them financially, and they returned to Jerusalem and began to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. Remarkable. So God says, I'm going to do something that's remarkable, something that's going to make headlines. God's saying, I'm behind the headlines. Occasionally, I've been known to read the Children of the Church, one of my favourite poems. In fact, it's a children's poem. It tells you something about me, I suppose. Steve Turner is a wonderful Christian poet. And he's written written a poem for children called My Dad. You've heard it before, so some of you won't have heard it at all. So I'll just read it because it's always worth a second hearing. This is what he writes. My dad's bigger than your dad. My dad's as tall as the moon, as strong as the wind, as wide as the sky. You should see my dad. He's got stars in his fists. He bends rainbows on his knee. When he breathes, clouds move. He's good, is my dad. You can't scare him with the dark. You can't scare him with guns or sticks. He makes bullies say sorry just by staring. Big green monsters fall asleep on his lap. Ghosts start haunting each other. My dad's been everywhere, but he says he likes the world. Earth people are fun, he says. My dad knows more than teacher. He knows everything. He knows what you're thinking, even when you try to trick him by thinking something else. If you tell a lie, my dad says he can tell by the look on your face. My dad's the best dad ever. I say I love him a million times a million times a million times a million trillion. My dad says he loves me a billion trillion times more than that. My dad likes to love. My dad made the world. And so, God says, I made the world. And if you turn to verse 10, so do not fear, he says to his people, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. The creator of the world is our father. The creator of the universe is our dad. And he's good, is our dad. So don't fear other people. This is just three things God wants us to be aware of. First, we're not to fear other people. Then we're not to fear the future. And then we're not to fear hardship. Firstly, do not fear other people, verses 11 to 13. All who rage against you will surely be ashamed and disgraced. God can break the power of our worst enemy. American Christians for many years were programmed by the leaders to fear the Reds under the bed, to fear the communists. And then suddenly there weren't any communists anymore. I remember as a young man hearing one of Brother Andrew's team talk about being in China in the Cultural Revolution and seeing the Red Guards marching against the West and against religious belief. And one of them said to him, next year we'll be marching in London. And a kind of fear went around the Christian world. Now the Chinese are here, but they're studying here, they're running businesses here, they're coming here on tourist visas and taking pictures of Trafalgar Square and Buckingham Palace. And suddenly we've discovered that there are more Christians in China in church this morning than there are in Western Europe. And you see that, you know, all our fears of other people are just, God says, forget that. I am your God. I am in control of the headlines. Our destiny is in his hands. We were made for eternity. Not even death itself can overcome us. Because death will be the last enemy, will be the last of our enemies to be destroyed. So God says, do not fear other people. They will come to nothing. My people will stand. My word will prevail. I am God. I am in charge of the headlines. And he goes on to say, don't fear the people. Don't fear the future. Verses 14 to 16. Don't fear the future. Do not be afraid, O worm Jacob. That's you and me. O little Israel. For I myself will help you, declares the Lord, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. You will prevail. You will prevail. Doesn't mean that we're going to get everything right. Doesn't mean everything's going to go right for us. Children. Our children fail their exams sometimes, but they're still our children. We don't greet them as they come home from school with a sad face and say, you got a D in maths, pack your bags, you're leaving. We don't say that to them. They're still our children. We still love them. We still have a place in our heart for them. Why do you think that God loves you less than that? What makes you think that God cares for you less than that? We try and control the future. They're control freaks. How many control freaks does it take to change a light bulb? Answer, one, because no one else knows how to do it properly. We're control freaks. We want the future to be exactly right, but we're not. God calls us a worm. At the bottom of the pile, the bottom feeders in the aquarium of life. God says, you're just a worm. You know what? Just be yourself. Be who you are. Be small, that's fine, because I'm big. And I'm more than big enough for your problems. We're God's children. We're destined for glory. We can out-survive our enemies. The future is in God's hands. And we are in God's hands. So God says, don't fear the future. I'll be with you. I'll be with you. I'm not going to leave you. I'm going nowhere, says God. I'm right by your side. You can leave your failures behind, he says, because the future is glory for you. The future is glory. So don't fear people. Don't fear the future. And don't fear hardship, he says in verses 18 to 20. Don't fear hardship. You're going to go through the desert? Fine, God says. You're going to go through the desert? That's okay. You might go through the desert, but I'll tell you what's going to happen. As you go through the desert, I will make it bloom. I will make water to flow in your desert. And when the worst that you see, you imagine happens, I will be there and I will bless you in the midst of it, says God. And that fear is what's behind the title, the subject of this morning, fear that God won't provide. And it's frightening. Have you ever been presented with your P45? It's not a nice place to be. It's not a good place to be. To be told that you've been given an opportunity for career progression. We're sacking you and you can look somewhere else. However, they spruce it up, downsizing or whatever. However they sack you, whether it's by email or face-to-face or text. However harshly they do it, you know, it's going to hurt no matter, even if they try to soften the pill. And you get that moment, how will we survive? How will we survive? One of my favourite films is a George Clooney film called Up in the Air. I don't know if you've seen it, in which he plays a man whose job it is to fly around the United States firing people. It's very, very witty, very observational about modern society. In big companies, they want to lay off 1,000 people. They don't want to do it themselves, so they employ him to go and sack people. So he spends his entire working life flying around America, firing people. He's very good at it because he's charming. He's George Clooney. And I won't spoil the film for you. It's a wonderful, it's got a great turnaround plot at the end, which I love. But at the end of the film, they go back to some of the people he's fired, whose world he brought to a shattering close. And they say, it was tough, but you know, I got by with my family and my friends. Said, yes, it was hard and it was frightening, but somehow as a family we work together and we make it work. And that's kind of the end of the film. Lovely, so lovely ending to the film. There's a couple that Susan and I know, and I think of this, I love this couple. They're deeply fond of the couple, Christian couple, and they're some years older than us. And we knew them in the good times. They were well off, and they had the most beautiful house, detached house. You should have seen their house. It was picturesque. It was beautiful, and it kept spotless. And he needed a largish car because of his business, so he had this great big 4x4, new 4x4, shiny 4x4. And they were living the good life, and it was all going well for them, and they were involved in their church and looking after family, and just the loveliest couple. And he came up to retirement, and the business started to go downhill. It began harder and harder to get business. And time came, he really needed to retire, but he'd been paying into a pension fund all these years, and you're beginning to get the idea, you know, where this is going, don't you? He paid into this private pension fund all the years, and then the pension fund got taken over by an Australian company, who then announced that actually it was more or less bankrupt. And this pension he'd been looking forward to, he paid fortune into it. The pension fund had lost nearly all the money, and he got a tiny pension. And Susan and I visited them a while back, and the big detached house has gone, the big 4x4 is gone. They live now in a modest little semi-detached house in a little estate in a nice part of the country, and they drive a small car, and they live very simply on their pensions now. And you know what? They're walking with the Lord. They're involved with the church. They're looking after their family. They're as happy as they could possibly be. They come through it. They've learned to downsize. They've learned that God has provided. They don't have all that they had before. They don't discover they don't need it. Paul writes in Philippians chapter 4, verse 10 to 13, that he's received a gift from the Philippians. And he says this, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. God isn't necessarily promising you vast amounts of money, but God is saying, listen, you have me and I will be with you, and you can learn to be content in all circumstances. You will not perish of hunger. I will be with you. You will find refreshment today. Live today. Don't worry about the future. I'll take care of the future. Charles Spurgeon, the great Victorian preacher, was preaching on this passage, and he said this, I will help thee. When God says, I will, there is something in it, brethren. The will of God started worlds into existence. The will of God made nature leap from chaos. The will of God sustains all worlds, bears the earth's huge pillars up, and establishes creation. It is God's will. He lets the world live. The world lives on the will of God, and if he will that they should die, they must sink into the bubble, into the breaker when that moment has arrived. The will of God is so strong that we can't resist it. And if God says, I will help you, it's as certain as the world. As I was preparing this sermon, my daily reading was Ecclesiastes, and I came across this verse in Ecclesiastes 7, verse 14. When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider, God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, a man cannot discover anything about his future. And that final sentence caught me. You know, I was preparing this sermon. It said, you can't discover anything about your future. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's not just the lottery numbers you don't know they're going to come up. You don't know anything about what's going to happen. You don't know the football scores this afternoon. You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen to you tomorrow when you wake up. You don't know if you will wake up tomorrow or if you wake up in glory. You don't know. You can't know your future. It says you can't know because the future's with God. But you can walk with God today. So, do not fear other people. Do not fear the future. Do not fear hardship. God is a great God, and God is with you. And God will never let you down. And though you go through the desert, though you go through hard times, though you go through trauma and difficulty, God will stand by you. Your future is unknown to you, but it's in God's hands. And my conclusion, I'm just going to pick up 5 points from a much better sermon than this one. This was a sermon by John Piper. Of course, he's a much better preacher than I am. And this was his 5 points for this sermon. And I had made no attempt to repeat his sermon, but his 5 points were brilliant. This is his 5 points for this passage. 1, I am with you. Conclusion, God is with me. That means God is beside me. 2, God says, I am your God. That means God is my God. That means God is over me, protecting me. 3, I will strengthen you, says God. That means God strengthens me. God is working through me. God says, I will help you. That means God will help me. God is around me. I will uphold you with my righteous hand. God will uphold me. God is in me. It's a great outline of a great sermon on a great God. Let's bow our heads and pray. If the band please would join me on the platform. You are God. You are the Creator. You are our Father, our Dad, Lord. And we tremble before you, and yet we adore you. We worship you. Lord, it's true. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know the future. We're not supposed to know the future. We're supposed to trust in you today. So, Lord, you will provide. However, whenever, though we go through the desert, even in the desert, there will be springs of water. All our enemies will perish. But you will stand forever and we will stand with you. Lord, you are a great God. You are the Jehovah, the great God. And we commit our days to you and thank you. Amen.